purification or detoxing. I think it's important to keep in mind when you come to a retreat, you bring in the momentum of what you've been doing before, obviously. So, I was at a funeral last week. Friend's son had died, and husband died a year before that. So imagine if this person came on the retreat, no matter what I've said about the breath or whatever practice, that would be really what she would be working with, the momentum of that grief. And I think that's important to keep in mind. Whatever instruction you get, that can be helpful, but there's also the momentum of the material that's coming into consciousness to not dishonor that and say, well, that's not what I have to deal with. I want to be with whatever it is, especially if it's very powerful. If it's just the trivial pursuits of a distracted mind, and obviously once this goes back to the object of meditation, but if it's very, very powerful, it's important to see that as a part of the purification of the heart. And that'll manifest in many ways. If you're a caregiver or you have a lot of intense situations where you're really helping a lot, you build up a lot of stress in the body and the mind. And there might not be one huge incident, but over time it builds up in the body and mind. So then when you stop, then all that's going to come out in thought, and come out in feeling, and come out in the body. And in the Theravada language, we have two words. One is citta, and one is mano. And citta is what I think in modern psychology they call the affective part of consciousness. When we get affected by something, we feel it. And mano is the thinking part, either the storyline or the analysis or whatever. And the feeling component, the citta, is what Ajahn Chah would say. He would say it's the mood of the mind. He'd say, check out the mood of the mind. What's the atmosphere that your mind is now dwelling in? What is the color of the mind? What is the sort of, those kinds of ideas. So if I've had a strong disagreement with someone at work, or got fired, or they got fired, say, then the intensity of my relation with those people that week is going to create an intensity of echoes in consciousness right now, obviously. So that'll be in thought, but also that'll have a feeling tone. Now, quite often we kind of know the feeling tone, but we dwell on the thoughts a lot. We dwell on the storylines. We dwell on the analysis. We might feel guilty about it. We might hate them or whatever. But I suggest that it's very profitable to learn about the mood of the mind without the thinking part, without the storyline. Because in that, you can purify the heart from those echoes by allowing it to become conscious, but seeing it quite objectively, feeling it quite objectively, and not recreating a sense of me, a sense of permanency, and all the rest that goes on with attachment. So if you have those kinds of situations coming up into consciousness, see it as a good part of the practice. See it as a way of sort of emptying out the mind, and try to have a kind relationship to that, rather than I came here to meditate, I don't want that, because that would be very destructive. Yesterday I was saying we have the capacity to recollect, this ability to recollect, and recollection can be in terms of mano, in terms of thought. I remember how to build something or make something, so I can have a recollection which is in thought, but I can also recollect feeling, a type of citta, a type of heart state. And a lot of Buddhist training is on skillful recollection. So part of it can be recollection of skillful states of heart. Some of it can be recollection of right understanding. So when I'm feeling uptight about something, and I recollect, this is changing. I recollect the Dhamma, I remember the Dhamma, then I have a perspective on it which can free me. So that's recollection, you remember the teaching. But also I can evoke or recollect feelings of the heart, wholesome feelings. So you take practice of metta. When I think of someone who I have great affection for and I bring them up into the mind, that person is kind of the storyline, isn't it? My mother or my brother or fellow or whatever friends I have. So that's the sort of storyline part of it. But beyond that, my heart has a certain feeling when I do that. And that part is a way of evoking an atmosphere within yourself which is beyond the storyline, which really helps you in meditation. So most practices, if you look at the classic Asian traditional ways of meditation practice, they always begin by evoking, bringing forth, recollecting a beautiful inner atmosphere. They don't just kind of sit down and hammer away at their breath. They create an atmosphere. I think that's very important because we're not faith culture. We're usually more like critical culture type people and analytical. Not all, but we have a lot of that. That ability to bring forth a wholesome atmosphere as a way of starting a meditation helps you a lot. It really does. It really just creates a kind of ground. So again, as I was saying, in the way I was trained in Thailand, a Thai person would chant Namo Tassa three times, or whatever. Or they might use the mantra Bu To, the breath. So the in-breath Bu, out-breath Do, Bu Do, Bu Do, which is the evocative of Buddha. And you can see, if you coordinate that with the breath, and you have a great faith in that word, not only do you have composure with the breath, you evoke faith, upliftment, whatever that might be. So there's a power in that. So I would ask you, when you begin your meditation, you can use Namo Tassa if you want. You can do that. But if you're not a card-carrying Buddhist, that's fine. Maybe you evoke a canoe trip in Algonquin. If you see what I mean, you're evoking something in the mind which gets you to a place that helps you be with the breath, or whatever you're doing, be with the breath in a really appropriate way. So it might be, like canoeing in Killarney, or he's taking me and Ajahn Sajik up to Killarney, so I keep thinking about Killarney, which is a beautiful lake. It could be something like that. It could just be the river, just space. Maybe you go out there and you find your mind is really just open to space, okay? Well, that's the scene that evoked something in you, right? So when you come back and meditate, why not use that? Why not use that scene to evoke? Don't try to repeat it. Don't try to manufacture with desire, but see that you can evoke, you can recollect wholesome states of heart through imagery, through words, through language, through culture. That's the general principle. So we use Buddhist things, obviously, because I'm a Buddhist monk. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. But it's if you understand the principle of it, then you don't, you can use your own tools in that way. So in a traditional Buddhist way of doing things, there's also the recollection of the Buddha, or the recollection of faith, or the recollection of confidence. Then there's a recollection of the heart, of kindness. And you see, all practices I've seen, they begin with some aspect of what we call metta bhavana. Metta means kindness, loving kindness. Bhavana is development. When I saw Jim, when Jim came in the door yesterday, and there's this lovely connection with Jim quite well. And there's this kind of lovely heart connection, right? So we just look at Jim's eyes, and very nice feeling. Now, can you apply that feeling to yourself? Can we all apply that feeling of respect and kindness and inner listening to our own minds and bodies? How can we do that? Because if we do, if we do have a sense of inner respect to ourselves, not just to teachers and other beings, then also we create a right atmosphere for understanding ourselves. If, however, we pounce on our negativities and our purification with this judging, critical, blah, 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 you know, that kind of negative mind, it's hard enough without that. And it just makes it doubly hard. And it's not an atmosphere of learning. Just as if I'm talking, and if you're listening to me now, you're saying, oh, that guy, why doesn't he shut up? I want to meditate, or, oh, I heard that last retreat, or, oh, let's get on with this. And you keep blah, 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 blah. It might be true. But you won't be listening. There might be a few gems here, you know. So, in the same way, when we're not attentive to others, and what the heart is going to close, isn't it? Well, in the same way, we have to be attentive to ourselves. And so we talk about acceptance or loving kindness. So, in the introduction to meditation, you see, you evoke the feeling of kindness by maybe naming another person. But what does that recollect as a type of citta, as a type of heart state? It's beyond the person. It's an inner state of respect, kindness, attentiveness. You can drop the other person and apply that to each moment. Right? So I maybe think of my brother, it's his birthday on the 21st. And I breathe him into my heart, Peter, may you be well. That evokes a feeling of kindness. And then I apply that to the breath or whatever's going on in my life, or to the purification that's going on. And those are the sort of the ground, really, for true insight, I think. Because I think you can only understand if there's love. Not in a sentimental, smarmy way, but if there's true caring and respect and attentiveness from that angle, rather than from the judging angle, from the acquiring angle, from the becoming angle, from the wanting to get enlightenment, wanting to sort yourself out. All of those other agendas don't really open up. So there has to be a kind of openness there. So that's what I'll suggest. As we practice, I'll suggest you try to enter into that inner atmosphere and develop your own ways, whatever you find. And then also, in contrast to that, what is the inner atmosphere when it's just on kind of automatic pilot? Is it an inner atmosphere of continually criticizing or judging or just going off into the future and the past? What is the inner atmosphere? And how can I come back to the present? And how can I come back to the present in a wholesome way, not simply in a kind of willful way? It's not a matter of imposing one's will on this whole business. It's more like opening. So what, like, if you feel restless today, tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, because you've been very busy, if you've been multitasking and you've got all kinds of things you've been doing, your mind has been used to organizing things and doing things and answering emails, taking care of the kids, blah, 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 right? So now all of a sudden you stop. Well, there's going to be a momentum. Maybe you're just relieved. Yeah, I don't have to do that. But if there's no, maybe the other is there, then okay, then... Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. How could that be otherwise? That's the momentum. So you accept it, then it'll settle down. If there's some kind of grief or bodily pain that comes through because of tension, oh yeah, okay, that's all right too. So you keep accepting it, but accept the go to the jitta, go to the heart of it rather than to the thought of it. That's where you can really process it. I'd like to start with some body meditation because I think. That's the most profound way to process these things. So stretch your legs a little bit, but let's. It's great up here. Isn't it?